Welcome to the fifth edition of the Jukebox Podcast from WP Tavern. My name is Nathan Wrigley. Jukebox is a podcast all about WordPress and the community surrounding it. Every month, we're bringing you someone from that community to discuss a topic of current importance. If you like the podcast, why not subscribe on your podcast player? You can do that by going to wptavern.com/feed/podcast. If you have any thoughts about the podcast, perhaps a suggestion of a potential guest or subject, then head over to wptavern.com/contact/jukebox. There's a contact form there, and we'd certainly welcome your input. Okay, so on the podcast today, we have Robert Jacoby. Robert is Director of WordPress at Cloudways. He's been working with open source software for almost 20 years and has been president of Joomla, a member of Make WordPress Hosting, and contributor to ICANN at large. He's well known for his public speaking about open source, and so the discussion today is broad and thought-provoking. We talk about Robert's Gutenberg first approach, in which he places the WordPress block editor at the heart of all that he does. He sees Gutenberg as a critical component for WordPress's future, a future in which as yet unimagined technologies will be built on top of Gutenberg and leverage the atomic way that data is stored. This leads to a discussion of how third-party developers will be able to use Gutenberg as an application platform, with unique pathways to create, store, and display content. The heritage of Gutenberg's development is also discussed. Right from the start, we knew that the intention of the project was ambitious. Its aim to become a full-site editor was explained at the outset. This has led to comparisons with other editing tools, and Robert takes on why he thinks that the incremental steps that the Gutenberg project has taken are making it a vital part of WordPress. We also look forward and get into the subject of how technology never stands still. The underpinnings of WordPress are shifting. New skills and tools will need to be learned, but that does not mean that existing ones are obsolete. Shifting gears, we move into the community events and how we've managed events during the last year. Robert is a huge proponent of in-person events and is hoping for their return. He loves the accidental situations which arrive when you're in the same space as so many other like-minded people. Perhaps, though, there's a place for hybrid events, events in which there's in-person and online happening at the same time. Towards the end, we chat about the plethora of mergers and acquisitions which are happening right now, as well as a discussion of Openverse, a search engine for openly licensed media, which launched with little fanfare recently. If any of the points raised in this podcast resonate with you, be sure to head over and find the post at wptavern.com/podcast and leave a comment there. And so, without further delay, I bring you Robert Jacoby. I am joined by Robert Jacoby on the podcast today. How are you, Robert?
Doing well. Fantastic to be here. Thank you, Nathan.
Would you mind introducing yourself? Tell us who you are and what's your relationship with technology and WordPress.
I'm Robert Jacoby, Director of WordPress at Cloudways. I've been in the open source space, wow, for almost 20 years. I'm feeling old. And actually got my raising on open source with the Joomla project, which is 100% volunteer open source content management system as well. And picked up WordPress, slowly got into there. And boy, that's a lot of ands. I love the community. I love the greater goals that open source espouses and tries to reach. We're never always successful. But having code and information more freely accessible is something I really believe in, and I think empowers people globally and provides opportunities that wouldn't happen if these ones and zeros were siloed away in, you know, golden towers. Yeah, I mean, I'm just always just so tickled to talk about open source and all the interesting things we can do. And, you know, it powers communities, it powers politics, it powers freedoms, it powers companies. It's really amazing. And, you know, we talk about WordPress all the time as one of the defining tools in this space. But, you know, you look at something like Linux, which pretty much literally everything uses these days. It's crazy how, to, you know, use Matt Mullenweg's favorite phrase, these things democratize all of us in so many different ways.
We've got a really broad palette of things that we're going to discuss today, ranging from Gutenberg right through to WordCamps and all sorts. So we'll crack on with the smorgasbord of what we've got to discuss. The first of our little laundry list is Gutenberg. You wanted to talk to us a bit today about Gutenberg, what you think of it and so on. And there was an event that I attended recently, which you were also in attendance at, and you were on a panel there, and you mentioned that in the face of proprietary page builders, you always had the approach that Gutenberg should be the first relation. It should come first. And I'm curious to know, what did you mean by that? What is Gutenberg first? What is this approach?
So Gutenberg first to me is that we recognize the benefits of Gutenberg and don't try to subvert them or sneak around them. I think Gutenberg is one of the most critical back-end, front-end changes that has happened to WordPress in its last umpteen years. And the potential for all the interesting future-forward things that Gutenberg can do should be taken into account. So page builders are wonderful. They offer all this functionality, ease of use. But I think that they should also take and utilize Gutenberg sort of concurrently. The advantages are, one, that Gutenberg's not going anywhere. So God bless all the classic editor folk who love that experience more than just being deprecated. It's just that is not going to be the way of the future. And secondly, the potential of what can happen when you start making all that content a bit more atomic. I come from a lot of database work. So you think of atomic data points, and Gutenberg does that sort of automatically for you. So there are opportunities in the future with Gutenberg to start parsing that data more finely. And that's why I think it's very exciting and why everything should be Gutenberg first. Again, that doesn't mean get rid of page builders or different types of themes and theming systems. It's just that at the base, Gutenberg should be a core building block of what you're working with going forward.
The way that I think many people are using Gutenberg at the moment, I should probably say the block editor, but if you're using the Gutenberg plugin, you'll obviously have an enhanced experience. But if you're using the block editor, at the moment, it feels as if it's prime time for editing text, inserting images, and some pretty basic stuff like that. But I can see on the horizon a whole plethora of interesting, curious, let's call them plugins for now, because that's what they are, different block components, different plugins which adapt and amend the capability of Gutenberg. And it feels to me as if that's where its strength might lie. I know we've got the full site editing and all of that coming down the road, but it feels to me that there's going to be a whole plethora of third-party tools bringing all sorts of added benefits into the ecosystem, a block for this thing and a block for that thing. And whilst that might create some kind of bloat, that to me is an exciting area. And I've just wondered if that's something you're interested in, if there's any plugins or blocks that you've been looking at and thinking, ah, that's curious. That seems to be stretching things a little bit.
So you make first of all, great point that there's block editor and then Gutenberg platform as a whole. And, you know, what end users typically experience is the block editor, but the Gutenberg API, the Gutenberg platform as a whole is going to allow for all sorts of crazy third-party integrations. That's great. And it might even be a little, you said the perfect word, there might be a bit of bloat and craziness. I'll say that that'll probably exist for the next 12 to 24 months. Sure, that's fine. As people figure out what works and doesn't. This is sort of a dawn of a new age around taking WordPress to the next step. We've talked about for many years, WordPress is just a blog, blah, blah, blah. Okay, we've gotten past WordPress is a blog. Now WordPress is a CMS. That's great. I think what happens with Gutenberg is we look at it and say, WordPress is an application platform, and this is just another API that we can take advantage of in very different ways. So we can have forms that are much more catered to content creators that get rid of all the WordPress backend and admin stuff. Okay, you're authenticated, you're logged in. Here's your daily news forum that you're going to add content to. And because we're using Gutenberg, that makes it a lot easier to publish that content and gets rid of the technical cruft and allows developers and third-party plugin providers to have wholly unique and valuable experiences around that. And that's where the magic, I think, of Gutenberg really comes into play, is where will all these third parties start finding those unique value propositions for specific content, whether, you know, it's in a vertical like travel or e-commerce in a generic sense, or news or publications or whatnot. It's really expanded the opportunities to create workflows and interfaces and make content production speedier and safer.
I think one of the curious things that I've observed over the last couple of years about it is that perhaps if we had the magic rewind button, we could go back a couple of years and potentially not really get into a conversation where it was, okay, we've got stage 1, 2, 3, and 4, and stages 2, 3, and 4 start to add in functionality that things like page builders can currently do, full site editing and all that. If it had just been touted as, we've got a new editor for you, here it is, I think it would have taken people along for the ride much more easily. But we've got this problem now, this impasse, where it kind of got sold as it's going to become a page builder, but the pace of development and the fact that they've got the legacy of 40% of the web, 40 plus percent of the web to protect and so on, it hasn't been able to move in that direction potentially at the speed that people thought, well, it's going to be a page builder. It hasn't been able to mature at the rate that they would have liked to have done. And so I'm just curious in the next year, 2 years, whether it will do those things. But also I wish we could rewind and sort of say, look, slow down. Let's get the editor experience sussed out first. Then we'll do the full site editing and don't expect it to be all these things. Because at the minute I hear a lot of people saying, well, it's not as good as the tool I've got over here. And it's not as good as the tool I've got over there. Speaking of which, do you think there's a case where it isn't the best tool, where you would say, actually, do you know what? I'm just going to relegate that and not use it first. Or is it literally always the first thing in your toolkit for WordPress?
It is literally the first thing in my toolkit because it will provide the greatest longevity in whatever is built. Gutenberg's not going anywhere. There is a massive commitment to it from the project side of the universe. And to answer one of your earlier questions about, has it done enough? I think it's exceeded all expectations, and this is where I'll get to it. There are always going to be voices like, okay, it doesn't make bacon and eggs for me in the morning. Well, okay, that's fine. It doesn't. I think, and I truly believe what the magic of Gutenberg is the paradigm shift in forcing people to look at other things. So it's hard to make a giant feature change in anything, whether it's proprietary project, open source project, or whatever. There are going to be plenty of people who are like, no, this works for me. This is great. Please don't change. I get that. But technology moves forward. People's expectations increase. 10 years ago, we barely had iPhones. All of a sudden we do. And now we expect everything to be infinitely easier and simpler and more responsive. Yes, it doesn't do everything that page builders do. That's great. That's fine. We're not trying to cut out the middleman here. And I say we, I'm not actually involved directly in Gutenberg at any point, but it moves the technological and user experience goalposts forward. All things being equal, the page builders of the world, Beaver Builder, Elementor, they're all going to go their own way. Having Gutenberg as a critical component, soon enough it'll be just a mandatory component, that's the end of the conversation, says, listen, everyone, this is what we need as part of the ecosystem. This is how you're going to connect with tools. You can absolutely go around those, but why would you want to? Because this will be supported by a worldwide community. It's not just going to be supported by the Beaver Builder community or the Elementor community, yada, yada. This is now the new core. And that's very difficult to do. And it's not, jumping back to what I said earlier about it, I think just making that change in and of itself and committing to that change is more important than full site editor or anything else. There'll be incremental steps, but that was the big milestone step. Like, wow, okay. This is the new tech, and we're going to have to take advantage of it.
You said two words in that last little bit. Well, you certainly said paradigm shift, and you said atomic. And I think for me, the atomic bit is really interesting because what I think many people haven't had a chance to get to grips with is literally the atomic nature of it. This little section of your blog post or whatever it might be, you can just have this little interactive thing. It might be that you've got a block which does, I don't know, lead generation, or you've got a block like the cover block, which will just take care of the top of your post. And each one of those things will have a different array of settings. And it doesn't have to be built inside a proprietary thing. It's being built inside of the default editor for WordPress. So it's going to bring a ton of functionality and a ton of interesting things. Some of it will be bloated, I'm sure. There'll be many people who fall into the trap of installing 50 times more than they need to, or 5 times more than they need to. But for those of us who are curious and check things out and look and see what the end result is, you're going to be able to create really unique experiences on this one surface, and that to me is really exciting. But I've had the feeling that the community kind of got left behind in the conversation about this a little bit. So the confusion that it was going to be a page builder leads me to the whole community conversation. And I know you're all about community. This is something that you thrive on. You love the WordPress community, as you have had loved many other communities in the past. Do you have any feelings around whether there's been enough involvement asking the questions? What should it look like? How should it behave? What do we want to leave on the floor and edit out that we just, you know, it was a blind alley, we shouldn't have had that? Because there are some things that I think are really excellent. There are some things that I think I'm not sure anybody's actually going to make use of that, but there it is. And just wondering what your thoughts were around whether the community had been involved, whether it could have been involved more.
I'm getting chuckles about a lot of these things, like, could there have been more, all the editing and all whatnot. Since community is, especially in WordPress, a huge word, it's always difficult to get every stakeholder, you know, given the space, given the time, given the vote. What I like about what happened with Gutenberg is that it did move, in my mind, relatively quickly and expeditiously and said, this is what we're doing. And I think it's too easy to be bogged down in the politics of community to actually get stuff done. So if things fell to the wayside, if things were not edited out properly, that's where I think the greater ecosystem can come into play and say, we're going to kind of tweak this, you know, with a plugin that makes this just a bit better, takes this out. And we have such a robust economy in WordPress that, yeah, go for it. I like to see a bit more activism from people as a whole on these projects, but it's hard. We all have day jobs. We all have stuff to do. And I'm not going to blame the leaders of, you know, the project for trying to get stuff done. In fact, I want to give them kudos to just doing it, because it's very, very easy to get pulled back and say, well, you didn't listen to so-and-so. You didn't listen to so-and-so. Well, you know, at some point we have to fish or cut bait. We need to do something, and we need to move, you know, the technology forward, because everyone else is doing it. And open source projects have a tendency, especially at their, let's say, late teens, early adult stages, getting sucked into managing the community more than managing the project and pushing it forward. You have to do both. It's such a tricky balance. All kudos to everyone at make.wordpress that they were able to do this. And it's a large scale change and get it done. Fine. If you want to complain, that's great. Guess what? No software lives, you know, at that moment in time. It's always updated and tweaked. And there are still opportunities to make changes, advocate for different functionality, expand the API, shrink the API, all those kinds of things. I do love that WordPress was able to cut bait and just go with it.
One of the underpinnings of WordPress since the inception, really, was PHP. And obviously now we're moving into an era where these technologies are being inspected and improvements have been created along the way. And so now we're moving into an era where other technologies, for example, React, is coming along. And that requires quite a bit of relearning. You know, you've really got to down tools, get the manuals out, start to read again. Do you have any concern that that kind of thing could be a bit of a roadblock? I mean, it will be a bit of a roadblock for certain people, but the technology has to move forward. Just curious as to what your thoughts are about how that's being implemented and whether or not we're taking it at a slow enough pace, or whether we should have just stuck with good old PHP.
I like to use the right tool for the right project. And I've been a coder, developer, engineer in multiple languages. I've actually never done anything with React. That's one of the first ones. And that's okay. We evolve. I mean, if we hadn't evolved, we'd all be still using C from 1969 or whenever it came out. So this stuff has to move forward. And if React is the best solution to do that on the front end, that's great. Some people will be excited by that. Okay, I get to expand my personal knowledge and horizons by adding to React. Honestly, a lot of the headless stuff that we see these days is also React. So it's not a bad thing to learn if you want to learn that. If you don't want to learn it, okay, that's fine. There are plenty of opportunities to still expand your WordPress activities solely with PHP. Okay, those are more personal choices. Do I want to learn another language? Do I want to improve on what I already have? Yes, those are choices you have to make. But none of this lives in isolation. So we have to understand that a WordPress, plain old PHP site might still need to connect up to a bunch of different things, and not all those things are going to be on PHP. You still might be connecting up to something with Perl or Python. No one's forcing you to learn it. Granted, Gutenberg injects this React universe into your face, but you can focus on the core things that you need to do without necessarily running into React. It's a tool that more people are... Here's the trick. There are plenty of new people who are entering coding, development, open source communities, and they like React. So it makes sense to take advantage of all this newfound wealth and then also draw them back into the community. Great. You love running with all this JS stuff. Fantastic. Hey, by the way, did you know you could actually implement that as part and parcel with an old school PHP content management system? Yeah, you can do that. That's great. And look how you can expand your horizon. Yeah, it stinks if you don't want to learn any kind of Node, React stuff. Okay, fine. But it's sort of the nature of code. I mean, we really want to take the analogy to the extreme. Why aren't we still coding on punch cards with ones and zeros? We're going to abstract it and find the best tool to implement the functionality we want to see. And I get it. Me personally, I'm not going to go out and learn React today. Me 20 years ago, though, I would have added it into my tool belt in a heartbeat just because it was just one of those things that you needed at that time, if that was the case. People are going to go through their own personal and professional sort of life cycles of what they think they need to have underneath or in their tool belt to be successful. We can't stop for people who don't want to do anything outside of PHP.
We're going to shift gears now and talk about in-person events. Under the auspices of things like WordCamp Europe, which is, depending on when you're listening to this podcast, it may just have happened, or it may be it's coming around in a year's time or something like that. But clearly, we've been through a period that has really shaken the community. I feel that as a community, we were probably as well prepared as any community could be, because we were already working via the internet. We all had our computers out and so on. And yet, still, there is a concern. And I know that, for example, people like Joseph or Hayden Chomposi has mentioned things like this, that the community, in the absence of in-person events, there's been a modest disengagement. And what I mean by that is the project, the WordPress project, was propelled forward in a large part by those in-person events. So you got Contrib Day, you've just got the handshaking, you know, you can actually meet people for the first time, you can build relationships and so on. And none of that's happened. We've had a year out. We don't know quite when that is coming back, hopefully at some point in the near future, but we don't know. And so just curious about your thoughts on that. What do you have to say about events coming back and how a project as big as WordPress, where there's no central office, where there's no boss telling everybody what to do. So if you're on the payroll, you've got to do this today and fix this thing. But that's not how it works. And so the open source model, there may be a chink in its armor here where in-person events don't happen. That camaraderie and those solutions don't present themselves. And so the project, I'm going to use the word stalls. That's a complete over-exaggeration. But bits of the project stall because nobody's meeting up.
Well, I am a huge, huge advocate of in-person anything. Whether you're extrovert or introvert, there's always going to be someone that you really want to talk to, sit down in a corner or have a cup of coffee with and build that relationship. I'm no anthropologist or anything, but feel that those kinds of human connections help us grow stronger, you know, in light of all the mundane things we do day to day. I don't think the project has suffered because of a lack of in-person events over the last year. I think it suffered because everyone else has had a lot on their mind. And there'll be certainly a renaissance of activity as soon as we get into in-person, but this is one of those things where I don't think correlation and causation match up. If you were worried about friends and family getting ill, did the economy, my personal economies take a downturn, that's going to weigh a lot more on someone than, oh, did I catch up on the latest WordPress.org Slack notification about full site editing. So I don't think they're completely tied together, but I will certainly tell you that as those in-person meetups start ramping up, I think there'll be a flurry of excitement and activity. Part of that will be just because we're not still trapped in our tiny little COVID bubbles.
What personally do you miss from the in-person events? I mean, you mentioned about having a coffee and sitting in a corner with somebody and so on, but anything that you find you're missing, it could be something quite banal or it could be something a lot deeper.
It's really the accidents that happen at in-person events. With a completely sort of regimented online experience, I know I'm going to be talking with Nathan at such and such time. I know I'm going to be talking to whoever. Everything's organized. Calendars. Okay, there's digital here, digital there. We may edit ourselves more on these platforms. When you're in person, accidents happen. We may be walking through the sponsor hall and accidentally bump shoulders. And it's like, oh my goodness, Nathan, great to see you. I haven't seen you in 14 months. This is amazing. And you just start a conversation. And those kinds of conversations are organic and random and not necessarily so overly planned and well thought out. And at those moments, I think unique ideas, exciting things can happen that just don't happen in a much more shrunken space. I love the distributed world. And to your point, I think WordPress has not only just gone through it well, has actually succeeded because we've already been in that position. We're already ready to be online and take care of the day-to-day. We need those accidental bumpings of atoms to create new kinds of alloys. Oh my goodness, carbon and oxygen went together. And oh no, look what happened here. I don't know what they do. I'm not a chemist. But my point being is when you're in person, and I'm going to keep calling them accidents, but not like in a pejorative kind of way, accidents happen and it allows for very random, unique ideas, conversations, thoughts, whatever to happen, or just even a personal pick-me-up. Like, you do remember me from being on Slack for the last year. That's fantastic. There's an affirmation, I think, that happens for all of us when we're in that kind of proximity with other like-minded people.
I think one of the, there's 2 points about the online events that I seem to keep coming back to. And the first one is that I feel it's taught us that we ought to have hybrid going forward. What I mean by that is that WordCamp EU, I feel it's going to be difficult to put the genie back in the box of you have to go to the place where the event is. I feel that the future is going to be, sure enough, if you want to turn up and you want to benefit from the hallway and all of those things, go for it. But also, if you're living halfway around the world, that now needs to be a door which is not closed to you. You need to have it open. There needs to be streaming of those talks that are happening each day so that everybody can take part. That's one of the things that I feel is going to happen.
I completely agree. There are events that I would have never been able to attend on a very regular basis without there being an online component. Someone will solve this puzzle, but I think it's going to be difficult to do a online and in-person event concurrently. I feel that you'll get the worst of both worlds in that case. What I'd like to see, let's take WordCamp Europe 2022. There's going to be a 3-4 day in-person spectacle. That's fantastic. What I would like to see is maybe 2 days before the in-person starts, there's a whole online portion of that. I'd be concerned about trying to do them concurrently. Like, are we really going to have, I mean, we can do all the live video, for example, but how interactive can we make those live portions? Oh, look, from online, we have a question to the speakers. Okay, that works. But outside of those sessions, how are we going to integrate the sponsor hall, the hallway track, as we talk about it? Those are those accidents that I like to refer back to, just walking up and down and bumping into each other. I don't think that's an easy problem to solve, but I'd love to see some kind of greater online kickoff onboarding experience where you can meet the speakers, do some quick Q&As, and conversely have the speakers say, make sure you don't miss my session on such and such date and time. And that'll, of course, be also live streamed. It's going to be expensive. It's going to be complicated. And I think there's going to be multiple variations of attempts at making that succeed. I like to go with baby steps to see results. And I think just starting out with maybe a 1 or 2 day virtual camp tie to the in-person camp would be a good starter.
I think that's what I was meaning, really, is just basically a camera at the back of the room where there's a presentation going on, with the possibility of questions coming not just from the audience sat in the auditorium, but from people in a different part of the world. And in fact, I feel in a way these kind of like skeuomorphic pieces of software which try to replicate the real world, you know, you've got these AI representations of the hall and it's nice. It's a bit of fun. I feel it's a dead end. Nobody ought to be under the illusion that that's what they're going to do. But I do like the idea of just here's the talk. You can watch it at the same time as everybody else. And then maybe you and your pals can hang out. You can do your bit online and we can do our bit in the real world. And so it goes. It's really just an opening up so that you don't have to attend. Of course, the problem there would be that nobody actually makes the attempt to attend. But I don't feel that's the case. And my second point is that I feel that we need this stuff back just because the online stuff, there's a fatigue associated with that. And I don't for a minute think that everybody's fatigued. And I don't for a minute think the online events don't have merit, because they have enormous merit. And they've been an amazing bridge. But I feel that there's a proportion of the people who would love to be at live events who just can't make the transition to the virtual events. There's something about it, something stifles them. Perhaps they have the best will in the world and then it's on the screen, but then something in the real world occurs to them. You know, the cat decides to chew up the sofa, so off you go. You've got to deal with the cat. You get distracted. You know, you want to go and make a cup of tea, so you get distracted. Whereas if you're at the WordCamp, you're fully there. You've engaged, you've committed, you've potentially got on a plane, you've booked a hotel, all of that. And there's no substitute for that. So that really was my second point, is that I want to get the people who've been disengaged back in and ready to take on all of the challenges that we've got.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page. I can do virtual events. I certainly prefer in-person. And the best example of how we know that in-person is very valuable is when you go to a lot of these virtual events, the networking spaces are generally very empty. People aren't having those conversations, those random accidental conversations that they would at an in-person event. Because at an in-person event, you are physically, quote unquote, stuck in that space. So if you don't want to talk to someone, you're just going to go your own way. That's great. But if you do, who knows who's next to you? And you're going to overhear things and interrupt a conversation and be interrupted. And that's that magic that occurs.
Okay, let's talk about the third point that we wanted to discuss today. I'm straying into an area where I don't have a great deal of experience, because I watch these things happen from afar. They're nothing that really concern me. They concern me in the sense that I might be a consumer of some of the things that are being bought up. But you wanted to talk about, as you described it, the WordPress economy acquisition madness. Now, what did you mean by that? Just kick us off. Explain what you mean by that phrase.
Here's the beauty of being a successful project. People with money will find ways to make money from it. And that's okay. And that's a good thing. We're seeing the likes of Automattic, WP Engine, GoDaddy, Liquid Web, Cloudways, yada, yada, yada. All these companies, wink, wink, they're all hosting companies because they've been in the space for a while under different platforms and have recurring streams of revenue and cash on hand. They're going to look to grow their businesses. And one of the easiest ways is to find valuable niche projects that not only will bring a cool bit of code into what they're trying to do, but also allow them to reach out to all the people who have installed that plugin.
Do you have concern then that certain parts of the WordPress, let's say plugin or theme space, are going to be consumed by these bigger entities, as you described? In many cases, they will be hosting companies for reasons you've just explained. Do you have a feeling that silos in the future are going to occur where, you know, if you really want a decent, let's go for, I don't know, membership experience, you really are better off going in the direction of that company with the brands that it's acquired over time? Or if you want to go for a WooCommerce experience, your best bet is going to be over here, and everything else is a poor relation of that. So we get kind of silos, which we haven't had until now.
I think that'll happen in the short term, but when that happens, a vacuum is created in the overall ecosystem. So if hosting company X has a quote-unquote monopoly on that membership plugin, Well, you know what? First of all, it's all open source. All it takes is host a company Y to be like, you know, we want to be in that space as well, and we're going to reimagine the underlying open source code base in XYZ format. Yes, a lot of letters there, but it'll happen. You know, these kinds of acquisitions and changes in economy, I feel are okay. We're all working from an open source code base. If this was all proprietary stuff that you could never take advantage of, I think that would be bad for the community as a whole. But that's not the case. It's just, you know, one company saying we're going to be owners of this project. You can still fork that project any day of the week. Don't forget, because it's all GPL. So I don't think we're losing anything in the long run. There'll be short-term hiccups. People won't be happy if that plugin doesn't do exactly what they want. But they probably wouldn't necessarily be happy, you know, even if it wasn't taken over by someone else. I think there's a percentage of people that will always want to see all this independent software. But all these companies are technically, okay, maybe they're not all independent because some of them are actually listed on public exchanges. But the opportunity hasn't been taken away. And if such and such plugin gets acquired by such and such hosting company, I certainly see another hosting company looking for that competitor also happening.
Do you feel that, okay, again, rewinding the clock for the second time in this podcast, if we could go back maybe 6, 7, 8 years, something like that, before these companies were buying up suites of plugins and what have you to bulk out their offering, we basically had independent plugin developers. You know, there may have been a team that grew up over time and they were inventing a solution for a particular problem, and they were really invested in that, and that was great. We want to solve the calendar thing, or we want to solve the, I don't know, the menu thing, whatever it may be. I'm just wondering if we're maybe getting into the territory of designing things to be acquired. We design something so that this can happen, so that we can become bought up, taken along for the ride by a big hosting company. And just really whether or not there's any dynamic that changes the way that, instead of serving the customer and always trying to, you know, offer the best support for the product, really your whole intention for that business isn't to create the product for the customer, it's to create the product for the sell in the future.
I agree. I think there's a potential for that. On the corollary, are you getting value in what you want out of that product? So if I use, there's something I'm going to jump into because it's happened recently, but on the face of it, it's a product that is so useful to me that I'm not going to have to do custom code. It's above and beyond every other plugin competitor in that space. Am I going to use it? I'm going to use it, yes. And to some degree, does it really matter what the incentives for the developer are at that point? If it's doing what I want it to do, then I'm going to use it because that's what I need to do. And it's going to save me 10, 50, 200 hours of development time to use this plugin as opposed to trying to create something on my own. That's question one, or the answer one. Answer two is, there certainly is an issue with, what's a nice word for miscreant? I guess it's going to be miscreant, where we've seen recently some plugin developers literally switch out what that plugin does and what its value proposition is with quote unquote upgrade. And they've done it behind your back. Like, oh, well, you signed up for this cute little plugin that makes banners. Well, guess what? Now it's going to do all these things and you have to pay for it just to get banners again. And it's kind of like, really? Really? Is that really what you want to do? And I think those developers are getting called out on it. The agencies and content creators, certainly in the nearby community, are aware of that. I think those kinds of, you know, they're not necessarily illegal in any way, shape, or form, because you can do that. But does it really stick by the unofficial developer third-party ecosystem code of conduct? And I think we're always going to see exceptions to the rule. But as long as those are just exceptions, I think we're in a good space.
Let's pivot again. OpenVerse. I've got to say, this is something that kind of passed me by. The radar wasn't working properly over the last few weeks since OpenVerse came along. So I'm going to ask you to tell us what OpenVerse is. I have a very vague understanding of what it is, but I'd like you to tell us why you think it's important.
This is a new project in the WordPress ecosystem. I should say WordPress.org ecosystem. It comes from Creative Commons Search, project that was sort of languishing at Creative Commons. They didn't have community and developers interested in pushing the search component along. And, you know, with support from Automattic, it came into the, you know, welcoming arms of WordPress.org. And it is its own thing called OpenVerse. I'm excited by it. One, because it sort of expands the open source vision of WordPress. You know, is WordPress becoming even a greater open source proponent? It's not just the CMS, but now we also have additional things that we're caring about, which I think is fantastic. It's simultaneously is going to be working on technical aspects as well as open Libre software model of content model, I should say, where the tool will be helping WordPress as well as anyone else, obviously, on finding Creative Commons open licensed media. So in this case, images. I think it's a great expansion that's completely in line with what the project is looking to do. And I think it's going to be surprisingly helpful and people won't even realize what's going on, but they'll all of a sudden be able to access a bunch of new content natively in whatever application. Obviously WordPress will be at that top of the list, but you know, you'll be able to access it with Drupal or proprietary systems.
What was the problem with the old licensing model? What was broken with it?
What was broken was there was no one who was going to commit to keeping up the code base to make CC search working and functioning, you know, tweaking it, bug fixes, whatnot. So, you know, as part of the WordPress project, there will actually be active development and maintenance of the Creative Commons search.
Okay, so was there any concern that things which you may have downloaded from third-party sites, we all know the ones that we customarily go to, that they were often perhaps changing the license after you downloaded things and then suddenly you didn't realize that you were in contravention of a license which you thought you had full access to download, redistribute, do whatever you wanted, and suddenly you realize, oh, okay, that's no longer the case. This image that I've got, I need to take down.
So there's a licensing is so fun and entertaining. So a lot of these download and image sites, those licenses still stand pat. So if you have downloaded and are using an image that was licensed under Creative Commons, that's not going away. Will they relicense new images? Possibly. The point is, how easy will it be to find more Creative Commons-based media? And I think that is the purpose of Openverse, to make that as easy and intuitive as possible. So again, it's taking what used to exist as part of Creative Commons search, almost like a fork, rebranding it under Openverse and, you know, making it part of an ecosystem that's open sourcey.
And this is going to be completely available inside the WP admin. So you'll have search integrated there. And if you want to search for, I don't know, a cat on cushions, for example, you'll be able to do that. And everything that's returned, you'll be able to use, hopefully, because the search will have returned something valuable to you. In this case, cats on cushions.
Right. That is my expectation. Obviously, it's not built into any of that yet. But yes, that is exactly where I see the project going.
But it was a nice philanthropic gesture of Automattic to take this on board and just basically put it into WordPress so that the likes of me and you can find our cats on cushions whenever we please.
Right.